Welcome to the Watch OK Please podcast, a podcast where three friends try to convince each other to devote what little time they have left to watch more TV and or movies than they've ever wanted to watch. Please join us while we argue about our media cues and waste everyone's valuable time on things that just don't matter.
Hi, Watchers. It's Dan, and thank you for joining us on another episode of the Watch OK Please podcast. It's a little surreal. We're already at 51 episodes. Thanks for sticking with us. This week, our friend of many years, Maureen, returns for our feedback on two episodes each of the US and UK versions of Ghosts, with an optional extra credit US episode. The US version is available to stream via Paramount Plus, and the UK version is on HBO Max, in case you missed the pitch. This feedback covers Anglophilism, deep IMDb dives with some gasp-worthy reveals, the future of HBO Max and America's streaming habits, and the clever and nuanced use of Chekhov in one particular episode. We are full on spoilers and double entendres for this episode, so please beware. We wish to apologize for any audio cutoffs and garbles for which we did our best to smooth over for your listening experience. Next week's episode is a special one, number 52, as we celebrate a year's worth of episodes. Please join us then for a special and quite likely unnecessary and random retrospective on the pitches, feedback, and content that has clogged our media queues. If this podcast is the best or worst thing you've ever heard, please subscribe, rate, and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And if you hit us up on our Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook page, you'll probably get a possibly informative or witty response from one of us if that's the thing you want. Finally, if you have a show or movie you want us to watch, please leave us a voicemail on our Anchor page at anchor.fm/watchokplease. All right, Watchers, it's time to get into this ghastly feedback. So put on your red coats. It's time for some phantasmic tea. All right, Watchers, we are back again with our good friend Maureen of many years not to be determined, and we're here to give her feedback on what we thought about Ghosts. Now, this is a very special watching, as you may have recalled from the previous episode, because we did two episodes from the UK version and two episodes from the US version, and then one episode of extra credit, so we were so able to please the teacher, as they say. Oh, that sounded wrong. Anyway, so Maureen, this is what we thought.
Okay.
So actually, before we even get into it, this was a great idea, Maureen, in terms of doing a show where you could compare to get the UK version versus the US version.
Yes.
Or even if you could do that with, like, you know, other countries, because there are other countries that exist. Honestly, unfortunately, I didn't end up turning on the US version as much as I think you may have hoped. I did appreciate the second episode you pitched, the one about the pants.
Yes.
On the US version. But ultimately, it was still too much CBS for me, which I would articulate as being, it felt too broad. There wasn't a bite to it, because I was trying to really distill down why the American version didn't click with me as much, because I love iZombie. I love Rose McIver. Akash Shambhunker is good. These are decent actors, but there's something about the broadness of it. That said, the jokes worked. It's clearly competently written, competently structured. I just ultimately, I didn't get as much from it as I did from the UK version, because the UK version, there were a bunch of laugh out louds, and I didn't get that from the US version, unfortunately. I think what threw me off, and maybe one of the things that most encapsulates what threw me off about the US version, was that it felt so broad, and that was really covered in episode 13 of season one, where they have a whole conversation about eating at the Olive Garden, despite the fact that Jay is a professional chef.
Yes.
It was a little weird.
Yes.
I didn't pick up on that one, but that is a very good point. Because why on earth would a professional chef ever go to Olive Garden?
No idea.
And to me, that was the writing was too broad for me personally.
Yes.
And I think that's where the things fell flat, because we've got good actors. We've got a decent material, and the premise is it works. But for me, just that CBS shift of it didn't hit as well as the UK version, because I was definitely laughing out loud randomly at times with the UK version, but not so much with the US version. Dan, I don't know if you had some experience with the US.
Yeah, I did get
maybe some of the same kind of feeling, the all things for everyone kind of CBS kind of idea from the US version. But that being said, there were a number of relationship interactions between the US people that I definitely did appreciate. I think that, you know, if I hadn't watched the extra credit, because there you go, I did watch the extra credit as Nyan had predicted properly. And I think if I hadn't watched it, I might not have felt the same way, because I think that, you know, there were some relationships there that I think that I kind of would have missed a little bit about. And again, we'll go into full spoilers in just a moment. Regardless of that, basically, it wasn't just the one relationship between the American revolutionary and the British soldier. I think that, you know, there is that subtext that we got a little bit between Thorfinn and Flower as well, that I think that we might have seen a little bit better if, you know, I had watched all the episodes in between as well. So I think there's a lot more, I think, that I think I missed by not catching all that. And again, if I can make time to go back through all that, I think it'd be interesting to see how that works out as relates to similar types of relationships that may exist in the UK version as well. Yeah, it's a lot to think about. But again, the Olive Garden thing, though, 100% I agree with you there. It's just, it's like people might ironically drink Fernet or Merlot, like we've discussed in previous episodes. But I feel as a chef or as someone who works in food service or bartending, but I feel like going to the Olive Garden or to Applebee's is more of a, again, I think they draw the line to Buffalo Wild Wings. I think that's kind of the line. If I work professionally in food, go to a casual place, my line is probably Buffalo Wild Wings. And then as it relates to more kind of fast food, you know, In-N-Out, Shake Shack, that kind of stuff, is that what I would think. But yeah.
You know, on that note, they also referenced the Cheesecake Factory.
Oh yeah,
that too,
right.
Because that was Jay has had
really dedicated to cheesecake.
Waitresses, you know, flirt with him. And forget that he's even a chef, but these are people who are coming from, you know, Brooklyn and like the city. And even without the whole chef added layer, that they are going to these kind of ghastly American chain restaurants. But I guess that's something that's in so many malls in America, whether it's infamous Natick Mall from our college days.
The Natick Collection.
And my current days, because I'm still in the area, or whether you're Kansas City, Minneapolis, Denver, I think that those are universal experiences. But then when you're thinking about people who lived in New York City, I believe, and one of whom is a professional chef who is cooking squab, why are they going to, it's like Pigeon. <It's> like, kind of. Yeah, no, that is a very good point. But then at the same time, they're doing things that the average American can relate to, like chain restaurants. But then there's also jokes like the one from the Trevor's Pants episode, when one of them says, "How long does cocaine stay good for?" And then the older lady says, "Why would anyone keep it long enough to find out?"
Right. Exactly. That's 100% correct.
Kind of unexpected from her, except when you consider that she's kind of late 19th century, early 20th, when there was, you know, cocaine and the Coca-Cola and cocaine for medicinal purposes. But still, now they're making like cocaine jokes, which is very, I think, kind of millennial and youngish, and more of a, you know, that drug humor is funny seems more of a coastal thing than something that has broad appeal to all Americans.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think that's the mix where I appreciate that it's good. And it, to me, there are things that are interesting and engaging about it, but it doesn't quite hit the mark for me the way the UK version does. And there's actually, I was re-listening to the pitch before we got on, and there was something that, Maureen, you called out in the pitch that I'm jumping ahead because I don't want to derail Dan's thoughts about the US version before we start getting on the UK part of it. But there was something you called out that actually, I think, led to me enjoying the UK version more. But I'll let Dan finish his thoughts on the US version first before we jump in.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I definitely enjoyed a number of the performances. You know, again, I watched the UK version first just because, you know, it gave me that first episode intro to the background of the story, which, again, the premise is all very similar. It was interesting that the location that they chose to where the manor was. I thought that was also very interesting how, you know, obviously the UK was always more of, I'm not as familiar with the different local geographies of the UK, but I thought it was very interesting how the two of them interplaced themselves, you know, and as it relates to a larger city. That was very interesting. But yeah, with the US version, I think that there was, I would say, I'll call it more of a kind of a laissez-faire kind of super chill attitude, I think, across the board. I think that I feel like that the some of the stakes didn't feel as like intense in my mind. But that being said, I didn't necessarily not enjoy certain aspects of it. I think, again, and I think that the D&D episode, which I believe that was season one, episode 8, I want to say. So I think that one really, you know, it sung to me on a number of different levels. And also it definitely played because it made two immediate references to D&D that were obviously part and parcel to, say, Stranger Things, which is on a lot of people's minds as the time of recording this. So I think it was very interesting that, you know, okay, so maybe there's a little bit of a recency bias with that episode for me. So I didn't have as much of a strong objection to, you know, the US ensemble, if you will. But I definitely, there is sort of a different kind of a magic or appeal, I think. Again, maybe this is just the, how would you call it, the Britophile in me. A couple of other Doctor Who lovers here, sample other, you know, fare from UK, etc. And I think that, you know, maybe there's some of that is kind of underlying within both of us. I think that might say, okay, well, this is the reason why I like the UK version over the US version in some ways. So it's very interesting to see how that works out.
Actually, it's funny you mentioned that, because that's something I was going to mention when we start getting to the UK version, is that I ended up starting the UK version this morning around 6 o'clock in the morning, because my wife goes to work really early. I was up and kind of awake. And so I said, let me just get started on this now so I can make sure I can finish everything on time. And through the course of her getting ready and her watching me watch the show, she accused me of being an Anglophile, which I had.
It's not Anglophile. That's a word. I can't remember the word. I'm like Britophile. Because
we started talking about like my preference because of the UK version. Because as watching the first episode, I was like, I like the UK version a lot more. I'm a lot more engaged in this. And maybe it's just the colonial in me between both having family from India and growing up in the US. It's like double colonialism. I'll do anything that a person with a British accent tells me to. And so,
yeah. And for the record, you can't see this at home because this is obviously an audio recording, but Nyan's wearing a red coat, so to speak.
That is true. I am wearing a red hooded sweatshirt. It says Childish on the front and Gambino on the back.
Hell yeah.
It's a good time. But yeah, ultimately, I think I do have a bit of an affinity for the British stuff more. If you're wondering how British the British version is, in the Christmas special, which was the second episode that Maureen recommended, in the credits, they list a tea and coffee PA. They literally have a dedicated tea and coffee PA in the credits. Good job, Lauren Samways, for being an excellent tea and coffee PA on the Christmas special for Ghosts.
Good show. Good show.
Yes.
Yeah, sorry, I derailed that quite a bit. So, I'm absolutely angry.
No, it's 100% accurate.
Yeah, well, I think I didn't mean to do this, but I really liked how the episodes I picked for the US version ended up being related to each other, because the watch they find in episode 13 ends up being the one that they're selling three episodes later in the Trevor's Pants episode.
I was going to mention that. Yeah.
I thought you intended that.
Oh, no, I picked the vault episode mostly for the surprise appearance of Matt Walsh, but also the kind of focus on the sucked off pun.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Off and going down, which is, I think
I don't think that's the right term you want to use.
That's the one where I can't even remember what other episode, but that's appeared before, and I think Sam has kind of expressed some concerns, or she started to say, wait a minute, maybe that's not what you want to be saying, and that's when Trevor usually says, shh, stop it. Like, this is some of the only enjoyment I get. Like, hearing these, the Viking and the Victorian lady saying, oh, yes, maybe, you know, we'll be sucked off one day and that. But no, so
that's pretty good.
He went down on us. That was great.
Yeah, he went down on us. What I also liked about that episode is, even though I know it's being viewed in a vacuum, it's kind of a surprise appearance from a new character.
Right.
And kind of, I liked how Hetty told them to try her birthday for the vault, and it didn't work. And then, of course, it was the maid's birthday, and 100%. That was what did it. And then, you know, Silas comes out, and he's kind of like, well, is anybody else here? Like, maybe the maid?
That wasn't bad.
Again, he was looking for some action, even in death, you know?
Yes. So. And it's, as far as the whole motif of the ghosts have powers, it was kind of funny that his power was to make people horny.
That was pretty brilliant.
That was hilarious. Yeah, I agree. I mean, and it was like, of all people, it's just like it had to get to Instagram influencer of all people, right?
Yeah, and then I really loved the brilliance of the Trevor's Pants episode because of the way that the ensemble comes together to help Trevor. And it really is kind of his redemption arc because, again, I know we watched the 13, 16, and then D&D, the bonus, was after right. that. But you can kind of tell that Trevor is a bit douchey. And
this was, but so
if you've seen the whole thing, then you've watched him be douchey for almost a whole season.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of a redemption arc that he is not quite what we think he is.
Yeah, that was the one thing I would give the US version. That episode where he does go through that redemption arc was impressive. I'm a little bit colored in the fact that I'd seen 11 episodes before jumping into this.
Right.
And so I'd seen him be douchey that whole time. And so they did do a good job with that. I'll definitely give him that. And I love a good Robel Hubel appearance.
Yes. I made that note. I'm like, that's amazing that he showed up as Ari Cantor.
Yeah.
Again, see, for me, I took a little bit too much of kind of a personal remembrance from undergraduate because of like all the names involved. Like, so all of a sudden, like my mind started going, oh, he's an amalgamation of this person and that person, this person. And wow, they're equally as douchey.
And then you're almost like, wait a minute, can I look at the list of writers to make sure that we didn't go to school with anybody in the writers' room? Because this is definitely a bit on the nose.
Is our generations of Kaufman and Crane in the house, basically, is my question. So
yes, absolutely. But that and I really don't know whether to like or loathe the Jewish rep because they were all pretty awful.
Well, I have to say, Mazel Pincus, I'm getting your promotion.
Mazel Pincus. And I kind of wish that we knew what happened to Pincus, who took Trevor's pants and went off on his fun run.
And the money clip. And the money clip and that he owed him.
And then went off on the fun run.
Did he leave the money clip on his grave, though, is my question.
I don't know. Well, see, that's not a coin. It's supposed to leave a coin on the...
Yeah, I know.
A coin or a stone, not a money clip. But yeah, I want to know what happened.
It represents money.
Yes. I want to know what happened to Pincus, who did not witness Trevor's heart attack from taking two random pills from the pill closet.
Pill roulette, yes.
Pill roulette.
That's something I would never advocate doing ever. I mean, unless you are, even if you're a pharmacist, it's probably not a good idea.
No.
You might not even be able to tell.
You do not know what you are necessarily going to react to. So we absolutely do not advocate pill roulette.
This is your PSA. Do not do pill roulette.
And as we can see, what happened to Trevor is he appeared to be a healthy man in his late 20s who had a heart attack from taking random pills. So don't do it, kids. Don't do it.
That being said, the takeaway I had from that is that, man, the iced bit is never going to die.
Yes.
That was well done.
That was totally well done.
It was a weird, I guess I'm assuming that was an Anton Chekhov reference to spinning off ice.
Yeah.
Correct.
I love that. That was pretty brilliant.
I love that so much. I'm like, how could they say something, you know, it was Smirnoff, AKA Russian, without saying it was Russian? Because they can say ice, because ice is like whatever. You got ice wine, all the ice beers, like Natty Ice, etc. So you couldn't really take that. You couldn't copyright that. But they had to throw in something that would basically be kind of poignant and clearly Russian and have like kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing. And Chekhov ice was perfect.
Chekhov chill.
Chill, sorry.
Oh, Chekhov Chill.
No, yes.
Chill, Chill, yes, yeah. But then well, ice bit, yeah, yeah.
It worked as Chekhov's gun because they brought it up in the beginning.
Exactly.
And then yes. It showed up at the end. Love it.
Exactly. That's exactly why it was so brilliant.
That is probably a joke that goes way over the heads of the target audience, and only like nerds like us are like, wait a minute, that's some sort of like a literary reference.
See, let me put it this way. The writing with regards to Chekhov Chill has way more layers than the actual flavor of any ice beverage like that.
Yes. So. One thing I noticed was that Trevor was still defending his friends even after he finds out that they pretty much like dumped his body in the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, well, they were scared. Some of them were barely 30. And which kind of, to me, was a throwback to the modern kind of political arena when, you know, certain people who are like grown adults are, oh, he's just a boy. Like,
yep.
This fine right. young man. It's like, you are 42 years old. You are not a fine young man anymore.
And I love their first, you know, inkling is like, oh, I have to call daddy to help me out.
Both of them are calling. Well, like my daddy says to lawyer up and my daddy says to make it go away. And
yeah,
you're both right.
Yes.
But
admit nothing.
Yeah. And then I really love how the ensemble comes together to show him that they are his real bros.
Exactly.
And not like the kind of superficial bros who dumped his body in a lake to hide their, not even really in the grand scheme of things, it wasn't really that big of a deal, you know, because he took pills. Like there was no real.
Yeah, but them being caught with like around the pills and you sort of have to deal with possession charges.
But then like the pills were in the hidden compartment and they could just say
that's why they were there.
Pills. I think it would be kind of easy to. Yeah. Cover up. Then again, I've never been in a situation where I have to hide a body, so I can't really.
Yeah. So in this case, basically, it was funny because they weren't dealing with dead prostitutes, so to speak. They were dealing with a dead one of their own, which I thought was very interesting because usually it's a stripper or a prostitute that you know this group of entitled people has to deal with in other stories, so to speak.
Like 1998's Very Bad Things.
Right. Exactly.
Pulled that out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So I guess should we talk about let's move on to the bonus. I'm really glad that you allowed me to extend your typical 2-hour kind of limit or so with content to pitch the bonus episode with D&D, because that again is also one of my favorites with Isaac and his Isaac, you know, like his name.
Yeah, Isaac with I in front of it.
Yeah. No, like the EYE and.
Brilliant. Well, no, you remember, you don't shoot until you see the green in his eyes. I mean, their eyes.
The green in their eyes, yes. Not that I know what the color of their eyes are, but. And that was also kind of fun because, of course, you see the guy in the flashback, and then it's kind of a surprise when Sam and the handyman go out to the shed and open the door. And surprise now, here's more ghosts that we haven't seen.
The British are coming. The British are coming.
And I always love when new ghosts react to Sam being able to see them.
Agreed. That was pretty wild. You're like, wait a minute.
Like, she's gawping, you know, at me or something, or she can see me. And like, they're ghosts. And even though just like their sense of wonder at a human seeing them is, it's just whimsical and I like it.
Right. I mean, again, think about it. They're still coming to grips as to why they're still there. At the same time, they're now seeing a phenomenon where they're able to interact with the actual living world beyond their stated powers, so to speak.
Yes.
For the ones we know about. And like, again, that's a huge thing for a lot of them. So because like, they may go hundreds of years and not even know, or, you know, not even be able to have that level of interaction with a living being. And then boom, now all of a sudden you have a medium.
Yeah. Well, so. it's only, I do believe you mean why they haven't been sucked off.
Yeah, exactly. That's correct.
But yeah. Well, I think it's interesting for how they have each other, where I think Thorfinn was the first, and then Sass, and then probably Isaac. And
right.
You know, I really could go through, but it's kind of interesting how they are building pantheon of historical eras over the course of quite literally 1,000 years.
So one thing about Thorfinn, before we go on, I want to note is that I was like really surprised that they actually used the full name of Thorfinn, because Thorfinn is actually named the protagonist from the somewhat popular or popular by acclaim anime Vinland Saga, which is actually coming back for its next season very later this fall. So it's very funny because the character there, Thorfinn, is someone who is highly driven by revenge to kill the person who killed his father. So that was very interesting to see that name. Again, Thor is obviously a popular god amongst them, as we know, via the Marvel movies and whatnot and via mythology. But I thought it was really interesting how they went right for Thorfinn, that very common name in this kind of story of revenge and whatnot. So it was very interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. That is interesting.
Also featured in the Norsemen more recently in the movie theater as well.
I guess it must be like the Viking equivalent of John or...
Right. Powerful name, because obviously he's named after the God of Thunder. And again, he, you know, there's a lot of naming conventions, you know, that exist in various different cultures out there. And I think that I like to think that, you know, that Tolkien, for example, takes a lot of his kind of approach to naming of a lot of the different, you know, main lineages and the main different groups in Middle Earth along the same way. So that's what I like to personally take it from. But anyway, I don't mean to segment too far. I just wanted to make note of that. That I thought was really neat. So
fair enough.
I thought
that as far as the D&D episode goes, I didn't rewatch that for this, but I had seen it before. But it actually got me thinking about the fact that this is, again, a professional chef who's hanging out playing D&D, which contrasts with a show that we covered before this, The Bear, on Hulu, with a chef who's just constantly dealing with his own personal demons. So it's great.
And screaming.
Screaming and just being exhausted, almost lighting his apartment on fire. This is definitely a turn from that. So it's great to see a chef just being nerdy as opposed to self-destructive.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
I mean, well, Carmi's got a complicated family. And
that's true. That's true.
And well, I guess also then Jay's got the spare time to do things like D&D, and he's not in the back room cooking family or...
Right. 100%.
You know, doing...
What? Or trying to decipher the previous financial statements.
Or I guess Jay is probably free on Mondays.
if nothing else, yeah.
You know.
True. Yeah, yeah.
But
Food and Wine's best new D&D player.
Yeah.
There you go. Perfect.
Yeah, no, but it was definitely really interesting to see that. And again, I mentioned before, we got a couple of references to Stranger Things with a Demogorgon and on the Mind Flayer, which I thought was also cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess that those are specifically D&D monsters that the average American would have heard of,
right?
Even if they don't play even if they didn't play D&D in their youth or whatever.
Right. Exactly. Now I'm beginning to wonder, maybe I should have come to the table with not just my favorite ghosts, but maybe I should have come to the table characterizing them in the 9-square area of, you know, from lawful good to et cetera. You know, I wonder if I should have done that now. Retrospect.
There's still time. We can do it on the fly. Can we jump into the UK stuff?
Yes.
This is the stuff that I love.
Okay.
Having watched it this morning, I was surprised that I ended up liking it as much as I did almost immediately, because there was such a shift between the way, and I guess Dan doesn't necessarily have the benefit of it for having not watched the pilot or of the American version, but to see the difference between how the couple in the UK version was just like, no, we're just doing it. Like, we're as opposed to the conflict with that Jay and Rose McIver's character had about actually taking on the estate.
Sure.
Yeah.
I can appreciate both approaches, but I definitely clicked more with the UK version right off the bat.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just seemed to work for me. And Maureen, in the pitch for the show from last week, you'd mentioned you liked the UK version because you like, or one of the reasons you like the US version was that because you were familiar with the back catalog of the leads, right?
Yes. Both
Rose McIver and Akasha Budkar. I had that same experience with the UK version. And if you guys will give me a minute, I'd like to go down an IMDb rabbit hole.
Okay. Because,
of course. Yes.
Let's go.
Let's do this, man.
And let's start this with three words. Stath, let's flats. Have you guys ever seen this show?
No, but I've seen it on IMDb when kind of looking up other people. And
fair enough. It's available on HBO Max now.
Okay.
Kyle Smith Bino, Mike.
Yeah.
The main character. He's in Stath, Let's Flats. And also Charlotte Ritchie has an appearance in Stath, Let's Flats. And also the woman who plays Catherine, Lolly Adefope, also in Stath, Let's Flats. So that's that weird connection. And the fact that they start off the first episode of Ghosts complaining about estate agents
Yes.
And I double checked it because I was like, this might be a direct reference to Statler's Flats. Statler's Flats came out like a year before Ghosts. So it's entirely possible that they're slamming estate agents because Statler's Flats is about folks, real estate agents renting flats.
That is deep. I love it.
I really love that moment in the beginning when they are at the really pitiful flat and they're looking out the window and it's a very kind of almost like an alley. And it's they're living across from a fish and pizza restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, this is really grim.
You like chips and pizza.
Yeah. And how it was almost like a Deus Ex Machina moment when she gets a call to say that she's, inherited the house, right as they're kind of going from one sad, grim flat to another.
Oh, yeah.
I like that.
Oh, yeah. They didn't waste any time. It jumped right in.
Yeah.
There wasn't a ton of back and forth. Not a lot of random kind of funny dialogue that doesn't necessarily need to be there. It was tight.
Yes.
Work.
Yes.
To go back to IMDb for a quick second.
Absolutely.
Also, have you guys seen the show Feel Good on Netflix?
No.
No.
So that show, Allison was also the actress, Charlotte Ritchie, was on that, along with the woman who plays Catherine, Lolly Adefope, which is a good show that I'll probably actually pitch at some point. But then there's that also weird connection as well. But Lolly Adefope, the woman who plays Catherine, has been on a ton of really good stuff, like Shrill, Lovesick, which I think Dan's wife has been watching.
Yeah, she's been in that, yeah, for sure.
And so I know that the other folks might have jumped in and been in other stuff that we've all seen, but those three actors, I think, pulled me in completely. And also, the way that they started right from the jump, or the way you were describing about them not spending a lot of time trying to figure out what's going on, but jumping right into it, getting the phone call, and the chemistry between Mike and between Allison, I love it. I like it a lot more than the chemistry between Jay and I don't even remember iZombie's character's name.
Sam.
There you go. ultimately, yeah, I think that's what a lot of that worked for me as well, because they seem to truly get along and be absolutely delightful together. And to me, that drove both the first episode where they're trying to figure things out and that care that they have for each other. And it felt genuinely driven. You get into that.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I think that's a little bit having to do with the direction is what I think I perceive it to be as.
Okay.
In that I think they wanted to kind of push a little bit of this American relationship common dysfunction that exists amongst some couples. And I think they wanted to have that kind of appeal to the leads in the show. And again, I don't necessarily agree or disagree with that. Again, I think the people, obviously, the Anglophiles that we obviously gravitate one way. But I think that there may be some people out there, if you're listening to this, we would love to know if you feel strongly one way or another on UK versus US. So I'd love to know. I would love to see a poll out there. Maybe we should talk about this on Reddit, maybe. I'd love to know, basically, if there is a strong opinion out there about which one people might favor more than the other.
Yeah. No, I did not even realize that Lolly was in Shrill, which we watched, I think, maybe last year or earlier this year. Time all runs together. But because, I'm always thrown off when British people do American accents. Does she have an American accent in Shrill? Or
I think she might have a British one, if I remember. I could be wrong, but.
Yeah, I completely did not even. Kitty is one of my favorite characters on UK. I guess we're going to jump back and forth, but especially in the Christmas episode, how she was so convinced that kind of the childish sense of wonder with everything.
Yes,
and how
exactly.
It was just really adorable. And then I think going back to the pilot then, when they're like, oh, tomorrow it's going to be food club and Kitty's going to tell us about the first time she had an egg. And then she goes, and I didn't like it.
That was so good.
It's great.
That was so good. So as far as like the going back to the IMDb thing, I didn't see or recognize as many people from the US version, but I did recognize a number of people like you had mentioned. Again, I didn't watch Shrill. I didn't watch some of the ones we mentioned here, but Thomas, the poet that he is.
Yeah.
I'm like, I could not put my finger on where the hell I saw him. And going back to his IMDb, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's Sam from the Wrong Man's series with James Corden. Yeah, so he was played across James Corden. I'm like, mind blown. I really, really enjoyed that first season a lot. And I thought that it was really, the writing was dead on. I mean, the second season was okay, because they had to wrap it up, so to speak. But the first season I felt was like, was spectacular. The timing was really great in that show. So that was really awesome, just kind of put two and two together there. and whatnot, and Public People as well. Although there was one from the U.S. Who was it? No, it was Thorfinn, actually. So, Nyan, I believe you are a fellow watcher of DC's Doom Patrol, although who knows for how much longer. Thank you, Mr. Zaslav. But I believe you are a fan of the Doom Patrol, correct?
Oh, 100%. Love that show.
So what would you think if Thor had dramatically less hair and less clothing on?
What? You're kidding me. That's Flex Mentallo?
It's Flex Mentallo, baby. Yeah. Yeah, I totally didn't get that at all. I get that. Again, this is the reason why, like I said, I think Maureen said we have to do the IMDb dive on this last the other week. So I'm like, and I'm glad I did, because I'm like, wow, mind blown. I just could not believe. And a lot of these people were in a lot of other very big other series. One, and again, I'm not as much into some of these series, basically, because you mentioned What's Your Face was on Call of the Midwife, which my wife definitely watches. But I also forgot that Pat Butcher looked incredibly familiar as well, and I could not put my finger on it. And of course, he is featured in Sex Education. So as Mr. Hendricks, Colin Hendricks in the series.
The science teacher?
Right.
Oh
yeah!
Whoa!
Yeah!
Familiar.
Yeah!
Yeah!
Yeah! So again, it was just really funny how, like, I thought I would somehow know more of the American people because I predominantly watch more American TV, at least so I thought. But it was funny that I recognized more people in the extra ghost characters from the UK version. I thought it was very kind of random. But yeah.
Yeah. One thing that I noticed in my rewatch, and I think in the pitch, in the American version pilot, which we did not see, Sam becomes injured because Trevor uses his powers to knock over a vase, which they don't notice that he knocks it over. Mm-hmm. But then when they're walking back, she falls down the stairs. I forgot that in the UK pilot, Julian pushes Allison out the window. And I don't think he ever really explains why.
Right.
Nope. That's something I do.
No, because the ghosts were kind of talking and they're like, we should kill them.
Yes.
Kind of. And then they're like, oh, wait a minute. Why don't we just haunt them because we're ghosts?
Right.
And so it seemed like the consensus was that we're going to scare these people and haunt them. And yet then Julian goes and attempted murders Alistair. Well,
I think that it's interesting how they juxtapose him versus Trevor in the US series, and that because he was an MP, he sees things, you know, in a very different way. It's like, so, well, he's a bit of a slimy bloke of sorts, at least what we see at first. And I think in his mind, you know, what are we ultimately wanting here? We want to go back to the status quo. We want to keep things as they were. What's the fastest way to do this? Get rid of the living people. And so I think that he basically is like, okay, I'm taking it upon myself. No one else is watching. I can do this behind the scenes, like a crazy politician might do. And I'm just going to do this. And I think that was the rationale behind that. And I think that's very interesting how you have, you know, a finance bro might have the same lack of moral scruples, clearly, we saw on the American version. So I think there is kind of a nice parallel. But again, it kind of just shows you that, you know, in no matter what culture you're in, there's always going to be people in positions of either wealth or power that will gladly do you in if it suits their being or their well-being, I should say.
Yes. Well, it's interesting because Trevor and Julian are clearly supposed to be UK-US parallels. Mm-hmm. But Julian ends up acting a lot more like Silas.
Interesting.
Who the Hetty's husband, who, you know, appears only briefly before getting gone down.
Well, again, you'd mentioned that there are some, you know, disparate things that happen, you know, in the course of the plot or whatnot. And it's not 100% episode for episode. There are, like, there are obviously some things that bridge both versions. And I think that, you know, because you're adapting things for an American culture versus the British culture, I think it definitely needs to be some elements there. Like we were talking about before, maybe it's the American was almost too American, I guess, in some ways for, you know, at least for our palace.
Yes. But it was interesting, too, that we find out in the pilot, no less, that Fanny was pushed out the window by her husband because she had caught him in his thruple with, I believe, the butler and the gardener.
Correct.
And then I love how some of the other ghosts were like, yeah, I was watching that whole thing and it was very interesting.
And for the record, not everyone cool has syphilis. And nor is Bernie Madoff a miracle worker.
No.
Definitely not.
Yes. And then, of course, I did love the Christmas episode in the UK,
was
the finale of season 3. And mostly because we got Fanny's backstory.
Yes.
And then I think I had said I didn't know what episode it was, but it turned out it was the one that I picked, but where Robin and Mary team up.
Yeah.
Because I think they're talking about the whole issue of Nicholas having his tent in the back garden mm-hmm. brings up the issue of property rights,
right.
which then Robin, the Neanderthal, yep. says, wait a minute, this is all my property.
Yep.
And teams up with Mary, who I believe was burned at the stake for being a witch.
Right.
And attempts to cash in on the property rights, even though neither of them have any idea what they're doing, nor can they do anything with money. Nor do they, I think they asked for like a squadrillion dollars or yes. something yeah. like that.
Something totally not realistic, like yeah.
Looks like that's not even a real number.
Oh, yeah.
And I love also how Allison completely calls them on their BS and is like, okay, well, here's the repairs, here's the bills, this is what you need to do. You better fix this or the house is going to fall down. Mm-hmm. And almost kind of like calls their bluff and makes them back down. And
yeah. Yeah, that was pretty hilarious to watch.
Oh, yeah. She did it so effortlessly. And I almost wonder if that's sort of something that we miss between the two countries' versions, right? And that at this point, we're watching a Christmas special. The couple in the UK has had three seasons of Ghosts to deal with it and adapt to the fact that they're dealing with a lot of nonsense randomly. Though, while in the US version, they're still season one. Episode-wise, they're about the same length.
Right.
But it's still a process of adaptation.
Sure.
So maybe... I don't know, maybe, and that's maybe giving the US version a little bit too much credit, because I think they could have pulled it together more. But the way that Allison approaches that whole exchange throughout the episode is hilarious.
I
love her just, all right, fine, you want to do this? Then you got to be in charge of this, this, and this. Get on it. Fine, we'll talk.
I think that what we're getting at here, talking about this juxtaposition, is that I think that the way Americans approach seasons and their intake of this kinds of content is definitely shifting. Back in the day, it was all about that 20-something episode season. And that's what because we were watching stuff on TV. We would sit down on the TV Thursday night or whatever night it is and consume, you know, whatever we were consuming. And now we're kind of shifted into this streaming culture where we're digesting stuff in 6-episode, 10-episode, 13-episode increments usually. And so we're kind of getting closer and closer to this more, I would say, European mindset in that regard. So it's very interesting to see how, even though it's season one, it's the same amount of episodes just about as the three seasons in the UK. But I think that,
yeah.
you know, it's just very interesting how they're able to kind of bridge that gap, how it relates to TV. So I wonder if they would have had chosen the same release format if the adaptation had been on, say, Amazon or Netflix or Hulu for that matter. So I wonder if that would really be the same.
And that's an interesting point. And I mean, it is kind of interesting that with streaming culture, we're now used to a more European UK model, but then that the Ghosts US is that traditional sitcom 22, 21, whatever episodes.
And now I'm thinking about it more. I'm like, define irony. Speaking of the US version being a cook and the UK version can't cook. Because his gravy yeah. is his nasty.
No, that was her. I think that I thought that was her gravy.
It was her gravy. Okay,
that's true.
But
yeah,
but it's funny how like you go from a non-cooking centric family to one that actually has a cook. I thought it was very
yes,
interesting too.
Yes.
Now I'm thinking about
yes,
it.
Yes, especially when they end up out of mostly guilt, volunteering their manor house kitchen.
Right.
To the local shelter because so that they can have Christmas dinner.
Exactly.
It's kind of interesting how Nicholas does show back up and then he kind of says about preconceptions and how clearly they thought he was up to something, especially when the second tent appears, etc. Then he says, well, I thought you were posh and or like, you know, and clearly like, nope. Look, judging by the inside of your house, like you're not.
Yeah,
no. And as far as spice levels go, they were pretty scary.
Yes.
The what?
In terms of spice levels, I'd yeah. say they were not posh. They were definitely scary.
They were more scary.
Yes, yes.
I would totally agree.
But when you see the outside of the house and you think they're going to be posh,
yes.
and no. And then it literally is quite scary inside because it's all like dilapidated and
exactly.
Like a murder house.
Yes.
Which in fact is especially ironic.
It's more like Amityville than Downton Abbey at this point.
How many people have been murdered in the house?
Yes. Yeah, I totally think about that. Yeah.
I had to have that conversation with a realtor before.
Ooh.
And yeah, that was
murdered.
Yeah. So years ago, when I was looking for properties with my ex, there was one place that she found that she looked at with a realtor that looked really cool. She was surprised it was priced where it was, and she really wanted me to eventually check it out. So I said, all right, I'll make an appointment and I'll go check it out. In the meantime, I Google. And so Google demonstrates that the owners of the house were this husband and wife with a daughter and a son who owned a ski shop in the area. And at some point, the wife got so frustrated with the husband that gave a bunch of money to the son to hire a hitman to kill the father. Instead, the son spent all the money on drugs. And so, obviously, after he does the drugs, the mother gets mad at the son and says, all right, if that's what you're going to do, you run the power washer while I go shoot your father while he's lying in bed. And so just one murder, but one murder is enough. So we didn't buy the house. The mother and son ended up going to jail, and the daughter was trying to sell it, hoped that no one would ever Google it. But
wow, Google yeah.
had my back that time.
Dang, yeah. man. That's wild.
That's a limit. So I mean, always Google, I guess, any property that you're ever looking at is my advice.
And always use your Carfax, apparently, too.
Yes. Carfax. What?
You never know if someone was murdered in your car, you know?
I mean, I was mostly concerned about flood damage, but now you're telling me I got to be concerned about murder cars too?
Right.
I mean, at least the driveway was clean, right? Like, because right. they'd spend all that time power washing it to cover up the sound of the father getting shot.
Yeah.
So, not so bad.
Yeah, not so bad. I guess.
It's a trade-off.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
So, I would like to talk about favorite ghosts.
Yes. Absolutely. So you guys want to start with UK or US here?
Start with UK.
I mean, ultimately, Kitty did it for me. I mean, and yes. I don't know if I got a good enough sense of her range, but the utter delight of her infatuation with Christmas during the Christmas episode sold me on her. She's Damn. Awesome.
Yep. Kitty was also in my top three as well.
And yes. Reading that copy of All I Want for Christmas is Hugh.
Yes.
this body romance novel. I loved it.
It was great.
She was the best.
Yes. Well, it's interesting because you want to, which it sounds like you do, watch the rest of the UK episodes because there's a really emotionally wrought Kitty backstory
Ooh,
episode. Because, wow. I mean, you can kind of tell by the costume and the mannerisms, perhaps, that she's like straight off the set of Bridgerton. Like, that's the era that she's from. But yes. So it's kind of interesting to see her backstory. And it actually kind of reminded me of the eternal optimism of, say, Trevor with his bros.
Mm, yeah.
Where then the other ghosts are kind of like, oh, honey, like, let's assess this from a more neutral perspective here. And Kitty is like, but I love everybody ever so much. And it's kind of like, oh, honey.
You're brought up in a certain kind of level of society where you are a have as opposed to a have not. I think you definitely have a rose-colored glasses kind of situation going on, for sure.
Yes. I'll throw in Robin, simply because he's probably been there for 10,000-plus years, and he's picked up a lot along the way, and having been probably the only ghost for a very long time, he has kind of adapted, and he seems to have a good relationship with everybody.
He's seen a lot of things.
For sure.
He's seen some over the years.
He has, for sure. I did appreciate the way he chose to do his voice and his accent and the way he approached even his sentence structure, because it wasn't too stunted and it wasn't too over rehearsed and it wasn't too formal. And I liked that balance he struck for me. And I definitely did appreciate that a lot, because he didn't talk as well as the Neanderthal from the Geico commercial, for example, but he also wasn't Captain Caveman either. So,
well, you know, he's also had all those years to see the complete evolution of the English language from practically indecipherable Old English up through modern spoken. He's seen all sorts of grammatical adaptations and conventions and shifts from the vernacular to the more formal and back again. And
well, again, you could say he Canterburied certain terms.
Yes.
Sorry, I had to throw one in there.
Ribaldry.
I really loved, again, a lot of the ensemble here, but I definitely have liked what I saw of Fanny in the UK version a lot.
I really think the Christmas episode gave her that extra layer, especially where if you're kind of not paying attention, like maybe I can neither confirm or deny that the first time I watched it, you kind of don't realize that she's the daughter.
Right.
Versus, cause I think she might even play Fanny's mother in the flashback. And so you kind of think that she's this one telling the, and then all of a sudden you realize, no, this is the one. Can't do your math. You've got to marry this guy. Comes off as a little bit aloof in her interactions with the other ghosts. And it kind of to see what she went through, even though you think she's most definitely privileged.
Right. For me, the screaming bit just cracked me up a lot.
Yeah. That too.
In the U.S., what are you guys thinking in terms of favorites?
Definitely. I like Trevor.
Interesting. Yeah. Definitely see, again, he definitely grew on me a lot more than I thought he would, for sure.
I actually roll Sass.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's the one who jumps out at me the most. I just wasn't as endeared to the ghosts in the U.S. version as I was the U.K. one, but he kind of stood out, just being the whole reason a lot.
He's also very subtle.
Yes.
Too.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love how he does take on kind of a more primary role in, even though it's Trevor's episode, when he's kind of like, okay, kind of, almost like a host. Right. In a presentation where he's like, this is actually, you don't know. I think the ghosts would think about these things because they couldn't see the ghosts at the time when they were alive. To be like, wait a minute, because I was there. I know what really happened.
Right, right,
right.
Especially with how Trevor has just died and everybody is kind of consoling him and they leave the room and Sass stays behind. So yes. He knows what these Ari and the other ones do. I do like Sass. And I think what's interesting is there seemed like there was going to be some potential for something with Sass in some of the earlier episodes. And Nyan, do you remember the episode when Sam went to the newspaper and there were some ghosts at the newspaper office?
Yeah, I kind of do, but I kind of don't.
There was somebody who kind of maybe had known Sass, and then Sam went back and relayed this, and then you thought maybe, even though clearly, I don't think we covered this in any of the episodes we saw, but the ghosts can't leave the property. You're kind of bound to where you are.
Or at least the vicinity thereof, like I'm assuming.
Well, no, it's like literally like a property line, because there's some things where the ghosts try to leave the property, and even if they're like in a car, they will... The car will leave and they'll get like literally like bounced back.
Oh, kind of like how we saw in the American Horror Story, in the 1980s version.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
I have not seen that, but yes, sure. Yes.
Yeah, that was a throwback for you, yeah.
Like you're bound. It kind of seems like.
Because the shed is on the property, which is why they can all interact that way, yeah.
Yes, because it's a manor house. I guess that's the advantage of having a large mansion with grounds.
Yes.
Is that you're not in like a quarter acre lot in suburbia where you're really going to be on top of each other. There's room. I thought there was going to be more with Sass with this kind of secondary plot. And then it just kind of was never brought up again.
Do you think that this is something that could happen in season two?
I hope so. Even though, again, I don't know what we're going to do with this, because if certain ghosts are bound to that location.
Right.
And Sass and the ensemble are bound to the manor house. Never the twain shall meet.
Question though, if you were to FaceTime between two different locations, the ghosts and obviously Sam would be able to see them, correct?
I would think that ghosts can see ghosts, but certainly I hope the writers of Ghosts US are listening to this esteemed podcast and taking notes, because here we're coming out with some ghost truths about the confines and limits of the ghostly world.
Ghostiverse is it, or however you want to call it. So
yes.
These are the questions here. Yeah. But
so yeah, if Sam was in another location and then FaceTime Jay.
Right.
So Jay couldn't see the ghosts, but could the ghosts see any ghosts on the other end?
Yeah, phantasmic structure can be seen via electronic devices, or does it have to be seen by the human eye, by Sam's eye, so to speak? I don't know.
Yeah, but it's like, does the camera eye pick them up, and can they see each other?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
because she can't record them. That's the thing. You can't record them if the camera can't pick up that what's happening. Then that's what it is. Or you have, or do you have to use one of those freaky, you know, infrared thermal imaging weird things that the ghost hunters have? You know,
the jazz singer whose name now escapes me. I believe is it Althea?
Maybe,
yeah.
In the U.S. version, she can make herself heard.
Wow, that's neat.
Yeah, that's her ghostly ability. And then, in fact, she can actually interact with Alexa, I think.
Oh, that's funny.
Yes, yes.
Ring around the rose.
Oh, that was really funny.
Great.
I kind of love how then, I don't think you see a lot of the scary plague ghost girl throughout the series, but it's kind of how she's brought on. Kind of how I think Thomas has said, in my day, we used to hear stories about a plague girl, and then boom, there she is, plague girl, like singing her scary nursery rhyme.
Yeah, it was that kind of snappiness that kind of drew me to the UK version over the US.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Again, I wasn't sure how, based upon what you had mentioned about the relationship between the two soldiers, how it was to be, but I actually did enjoy their interaction a lot. So Isaac, I actually did enjoy Isaac's performance a lot. Again, his cute awkwardness when he was around Nigel, you know, was nice. I wasn't sure how I was to feel about that when I walked into it, you know, but in the end, I really enjoyed that interaction a lot.
And what I enjoyed about that interaction is that 18th century Isaac is really afraid to confess that he murdered Nigel. But in his conversation with Sam, she obviously doesn't know about any murder. She's just there to tell him that it's okay. It's, you know, 2021 at the time.
Yeah.
It's okay to be gay. Like, you can tell him.
Yes, tell him
that you like him.
Yeah.
Except that's not Isaac's secret at all. It's that I accidentally murdered you with my Isaac.
although, again, he probably would have preferred been murdered by his ball sack. Oh, God. I didn't say that. Oh, God. So I'm so sorry about that. To say, killed by a sneeze, what a way to blow.
Yeah. That is not a good way to get sucked off.
No, it's not a good way to get.
He got killed by a sneeze and then didn't even get sucked off, but like rather forced to remain on this earthly plane.
Exactly.
Like, but it's kind of funny how then all the ghosts have been watching them for the past almost probably 300 years go through the whole awkward let's parlay. And it's so funny how all the other ghosts kind of know what's going on. I'm sure Baxter and the other British guy who are kind of don't even have any lines.
Right.
They might not even be SAG. They're just kind of in the background. But they all know, like, what's going on here. And it seems only, like, Isaac and Nigel are the only two clueless ones who... I also liked how they set up the whole D&D game for them to hash out their issues.
Yeah, that was a cute...
And then those two were like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. What foolishness is this? Whatever.
Yeah, like, the soldiers of the bunch didn't care for the game. That was very funny.
No.
They didn't care for the fighting part of the game. So that was very interesting.
I like that. And they're like, maybe we could parlay slightly more often. And I'm not doing anything now. Maybe we should walk the grounds.
Yes.
So I'm actually really looking forward to seeing what is going to happen with these two arch rivals going into season two of the U.S.
I'm hoping I can make enough time to at least catch up. You know, maybe because the U.S. version is coming back sooner, maybe I should probably prioritize some of that catch up first, and then I'll save the UK version for catch up on different days or other occasions or whatnot. Again, I keep saying this in a lot of episodes here where I'm like, I have to catch up on this, I have to catch up on this, and then like I'm like, wow, how am I gonna catch up on this? I will have a little bit of downtime with some time off in the upcoming week, so hopefully I can sit down and maybe have a couple of, you know, 3 to 4 hour binge sessions when I can. So we'll see what I can do.
Yeah. According to the all holy IMDb, Ghosts season 4, series 4, I'm sorry, is allegedly coming back in 2022. But then, of course, that's in the UK.
Right.
So,
in my guess, if they're going to do another Christmas episode, it's going to align later in the year, probably, is what I'm guessing, right?
That is true. Yes. But then again, I think sometimes series premiere earlier in the year, and then they'll have the Christmas episode It always does coincide with Christmas, but I just don't know if it's going to be like sequential type thing.
Right. Well, and we also don't know what's happening with HBO Max. As of the day of recording, we're getting a lot of crazy reports from different general news sources and also entertainment news sources about what the future of HBO Max may or may not be as it relates to content coming from Warner Brothers Discovery. So we'll all be waiting on pins and needles to see what Zaslav and company will do moving forward.
From my very limited understanding is that they are no longer interested in creating original scripted content. If it's UK production, it's not original to them. So hopefully it escapes this scorched earth policy. Yeah.
I'm hoping that, you know, that there's still enough solvency remaining in HBO Max with other properties that this will work out basically and whatnot. That's what I'm hoping for. That, you know, that they, that all the wind will be sucked out of that, because I felt like for a while that Hulu felt the same way. Number of properties or channels pulled out of Hulu. No one wants to basically be in rented land kind of scenario with regards to content creation companies and whatnot. So it's very interesting to see how things are going to shake out moving forward or whatnot. So in that regard, so who knows? Either way, whatever service it's going to be on, I'm hoping to enjoy it as it comes out.
Agreed. Yes. Otherwise, we got to go to the UK and get a hotel room, like all like popcorn, and that's it.
I've heard something called VPN. I don't know if you guys heard about this.
Yes, I'm going to trick the computer into thinking I'm in the UK, allegedly.
Yeah, I'll try and be extra careful, and I'll wear my Chelsea jersey, although the Liverpool fans might be mad at me. That's
allegedly.
Right. The only soccer jerseys I have are from Margate, so I'll get beat up before you do.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
Overall, Dan, it sounds like you're going to stick with this.
I think I'm going to prioritize whoever comes first. You know, it sounds like as the moment of this recording, it sounds like US will be back first. So I might pivot and do some of the US episodes first, and then I'll kind of catch up on the UK here and there as I can.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And I mean, in terms of, is this a critically acclaimed sitcom worthy of winning awards, which, yes, awards are highly subjective. And no, does it amuse me? Did I enjoy watching it with separately two different times with one of my daughters and my husband? Yes, it's a show that has broad appeal, but it's not one of the best sitcoms I've ever seen, but it keeps me amused. And that's why I wanted to bring it up and pitch it and share it with you guys, because it's something I really enjoyed watching.
There are certain episodes, like I said, I thought that, you know, in the American version that were tighter, sort of on a writing perspective. So I'm interested to see how going back now and watching the earlier episodes that may or may not follow some of the introductory plot points of the series or the universe in general, and how the U.S. handles those with regards to everything else, and see if I'm going to basically be more nine has seen more of those episodes than not. So I'll be interested to see if I'm going to lean more towards kind of nine's point of view, or if I'm going to basically have a more kind of centrist or even U.S. leaning point of view. But again, as of this moment, I am leaning more toward liking the U.K. version a little bit more. But, you know, who knows what will happen after I watch more. So it's because three of the American versus two of the U.K., it's almost even quite there. But, you know, I think we'll have to kind of see how potency wise, how things work on the same amount of episodes for each ensemble, if you will.
I think ultimately for me, the US one, I will not leave a room because it's on the television. I'll sit there probably on my phone. But the UK one, I'm probably going to follow up on and go through the whole series, because that definitely just caught me a bit more. I appreciate you pitching this one, Maureen. This was good.
Thank you.
Format of seeing both of them like nine and open with, you know, that's definitely an interesting point. And again, we'll have to kind of maybe revisit this at a later time when we have another series that, you know, maybe only one of us has seen on the same kind of perspective or whatnot. That might be a good way to go.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun. And I know it's something where I think you'd approached me maybe around March or so, and you gave me the spreadsheet. And I was really trying to figure out, like, what could I really talk about that hasn't already been nixed or covered? And so that's what led me to Ghosts. And
right. Yeah, it's a pleasure. Thank you for coming on.
Yes, really, exactly. Thanks. Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
I agree. Good time, you know, and overall, I think that we had found a show that could have been gasp worthy. So, you know.
Yeah. And I.
Sorry.
And I really appreciate your flexibility in allowing me to do a UK-US crossover, too. And I guess that's podcast first here.
It is. That I'm... Hopefully it won't be the last, because I think it was a really good idea.
Now I'm going to have to rack my brain to see if I can find a US versus anime crossover that go worth here. So I might have to think about that at some point. So I'll just come down the
pipe. Cowboy Bebop is already available, right?
It is already available, but again, that's too obvious a choice. I want to choose something a little bit, you know, deeper roots. There's a couple things that are coming to mind here. Nah, you think you already saw the Lady Snowflake movie?
Lady Snowflake? That doesn't ring a bell. I know Lady Snowblood, but I haven't watched that.
Okay, so Snowblood. Maybe that's what I mean. Snow New Blood. That's what I'm sorry. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. But I was saying, because they also did an anime version of that, I believe.
Oh, gotcha.
So, but yeah. There's a couple things out there that I'll think about. So if I find the right one, I'll definitely bring it up and pitch it. So that's what we thought.
That happened, folks, which brings us to the end of another episode of the Watch OK Please podcast. We hope you had a good time listening to us spout more nonsense today, and hope you join us next week for another exercise in futility. In the meantime, please rate and review us on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or just tell a friend about us. Until next week, keep on watching.